It is Tuesday's programme, the 13th of June 2023. So then, two university students among the dead in Nottingham. Have you been following the story today? A 31-year-old has been arrested on suspicion of murder following three deaths in Nottingham in the early hours of this morning. It's getting blanket coverage by the 24-hour news channels here in the UK. What's going on there? I don't know. We'll talk about that and more with my first guest this afternoon. No stranger whatsoever to you. The man behind the BCFM politics show in Bristol, live every Friday at 5 p.m. thisweek.org.uk. Former BBC journalist, our friend Tony Gosling. Welcome, Tony. Welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Richie. Well, isn't it interesting how you can have so much coverage of a story where they don't tell you anything?
Nothing.
I don't know. I mean, maybe I've missed if the police have given a proper press conference where they're actually telling the people that pay their wages what's going on. This has all day been in the news. I think it's since about 8 a.m. or something this morning, and yet all they're saying is the police won't say anything. Instead, what they're saying is, will anyone that's seen anything come to the police? Now, I mean, this isn't the ordinary Nottinghamshire constabulary. This is the anti-terror police who've swooped on Nottingham. And personally, I wouldn't advise telling the anti-terror police anything, because in the past, what we've seen is with the terrorist attacks in London in the run-up to the 2017 election, particularly with lots of them, and including the Manchester Arena bombing, all of the people involved in these, at least the major so-called ringleaders, are people that had already been reported to the anti-terror police, to the MI5's anti-terrorist hotline. And so this is a perverse situation we're in, but it seems that by reporting people to that hotline, that those people have somehow been transformed into terrorists and maniacs. And whether they were actually responsible for those attacks or not, we're not entirely sure. But certainly maybe, you know, by the security services steered into doing something like that. So I wouldn't be talking to the anti-terrorist police at all. I'd be talking to the ordinary Nottinghamshire police, fine, and I'd be talking to the press. But this is part of becoming a developing pattern in the behaviour of the police, Richie. And we had the Nicola Bulley case where they weren't telling us anything about what had happened there. And then there was the Bournemouth incident a couple of weeks ago with these teenagers. The police wouldn't say anything about what's happening. What they're doing is they're creating the perfect sort of scenario here for criminals to be killing people in one sort or another, and then for the police to be finding out using the police come and talk to us period, maybe a day or a couple of days after the incident, to find out what people know before saying to the public what they think is going on. So, I mean, I just don't trust the anti-terrorist cops up in Nottingham at all about what's been going on today. And I don't know if there has been a conference and they've been telling all, the motives and that sort of thing, what they think motives are, etc. I mean, obviously people in Nottingham deserve to know this.
Yeah, they're not saying anything really about what happened other than somebody is in hospital in a critical condition. Two more are believed to have suffered minor injuries. A 31-year-old man is in custody. But, you know, when you've got that kind of vacuum of information, when you've not got any information at all, it gives rise, of course, to people kind of concluding for themselves what happened. So there's an anti-migrant thing, I suppose, going on social media now, where people are saying
it could be all sorts of speculation is bound to happen, and the police seem to revel in this. This is where we need, I think, to be looking at social media and that sort of thing, to see what people are saying about it. I mean, I just don't trust the police's attitude up there. This is part of the police clearly don't trust the public. I mean, one of the things that happens straight away is, it should happen in a situation like this, is the police are putting out a call for evidence, but they don't just say we want to see anybody that's seen anything. If you're not telling people what's gone on, people won't necessarily see the significance. Maybe they saw something suspicious last night. And if you don't explain what's been going on, whether this is drug related or what, it sounds like it might well be. You're not actually true. It's a little bit like the whole Wayne Cousins business, where he's exposing himself in some takeaway somewhere, and yet nothing happens about it. I don't like the way that the police generally these days, particularly the central Scotland Yard controlled cots. And by the way, Cousins was part of the same branch of the police, which is a separate branch. The anti-terror branch is part of it as well. And as part of the Metropolitan Police that come and swoop. For example, you know, also in Wiltshire, when they had the Skripal case, suddenly these anti-terrorist police come down from London and take over the entire investigation.
You're back.
Totally sidelined. So these.
We lost you momentarily, but only for a second. You're back now. No, this is really good. Yeah,
I was just saying in Salisbury, a similar thing happened. The anti-terror cops come. So look, I mean, this is not proper policing, and these police are not serving the public. Whatever they're up to, they should be telling people as much as will help find whoever the culprits are, and they can't just try and pretend they don't know anything about it. They clearly do. The same attitude is exactly the same attitude from the journalists. They're all saying, "Oh, we mustn't speculate." Well, if the police are not telling you anything, then you should be complaining about that to them, to the public, and of course speculating. There's nothing wrong with speculating in that sort of situation. You say, well, we think it might be this, one of the neighbors has said that, you know, whatever. That's the journalist's job. But it's almost like there's self-censorship going on. The journalists don't even want to speculate as to what might be going on. They don't want to inform the public anymore. Listen, we're paying all these people's wages and yet we're not being told what's happening. And so that I really object to, and I find this is a sort of turnaround. It's a zero trust agenda. The police do not trust the public. So why should the public trust the police?
Good stuff. Tony Gosling is our guest. We'll leave that story for now. Here's a big story, right? So King's College in London and the BBC has conducted a poll. They surveyed thousands of people in April and they found that almost a quarter of the population believes that COVID-19 was probably or definitely a hoax. About a third of the population believes the cost of living crisis is a plot to control the public. And what's interesting about this is in The Guardian today, they reference the Mariana Spring BBC attack, really. You could only describe it as an attack on the newspaper, which is known as The Light. And when you look at this and you read this article, and they describe The Guardian today, they describe those who conducted the poll as being shocked by the attitudes of UK citizens and how worrying it is that people believe this stuff. To me, this is something we've been talking about for a long time. This is really now the ramping up of, I suppose, an agenda to eventually end or control the independent media, isn't it? It's ultimately to stop people doing what we're doing now.
Well, yes, it is. But I mean, I was I have to declare an interest here. I was for about a year or 18 months one of the moderators on the Light's Telegram channel. And 6 weeks before Bilderberg, I was making some points to the other moderators about Richard D. Hall's, peddling his ideas that the Manchester Arena bomb didn't happen and that the families of the victims were actually part of a giant hoax and that they didn't lose their loved ones and this sort of thing. And I was saying, well, is this really wise to be peddling this kind of thing? And I was just by Darren and his sidekicks just unceremoniously booted off the channel. So, you know, I'm trying to do my job as but I mean, the point of it all is that all journalists should be fact checkers. And we've learned from the BBC something to do with weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that were used to start an illegal war there. So the BBC, the first thing they should be looking at is themselves. There's a brilliant article by Jonathan Cook. I'm not sure if you've seen it. On Middle East Eye and various other places where it talks about the BBC are not stopping disinformation, they're peddling it. And that's exactly the case. That what's happened is there's been a massive fall away in trust with the mainstream press generally, the BBC in particular, my glorious old employers. And as that trust has fallen away, they're thinking, what do we do about it? Do we start telling the truth? No. What we'll do is we'll set up a unit with people affiliated with Paul Mason and MI5 and the Integrity Initiative, and that unit will be used to either attack people who do tell the truth or else to try and justify and beef up BBC lies. So this is a very Orwellian organisation. Actually, one thing I will say about them is the Kherson, is it Kherson Dam, where they... I'm not sure what the name of the dam was, actually. Kharkovka, maybe.
Yeah, Kharkovka.
That that was blown up last week, the BBC Verify did a really good job. They showed a satellite photo from the Thursday before saying, well, obviously this was hit by some artillery shell or something on the Thursday before, and it made a little hole in the dam. And 6 days and over the weekend, the dam was getting worse and worse as the water was going through it. It was sweeping away more and more masonry from the dam. And so when the story broke last Tuesday, actually it... the dam had already been being swept away for 6 days or 5 days.
Yeah, but since then, so, the BBC is blaming...
You know, they were making it only just happened.
And that sounds like good journalism to obtain a satellite photograph. But at the same time, since then, without any proof whatsoever, the BBC is laying the blame for the breach of the dam squarely at the door of Russia without giving any tangible evidence to prove that.
No, exactly. And of course, it wasn't the Russians, it was the Ukrainians, because we know that for various reasons. The main reason is they need to distract away from their totally failed... I'm not sure if you've seen the their so-called offensive, where the kill ratio, which is where what these things come down to, is something like 40 to 1. So 40 Ukrainians dying for every one Russian. They've lost a load of their tanks that they've been handed by NATO, which are these kind of past their sell-by date tanks, which, used to, really what NATO is doing is it's using the Ukrainians as live bait to see how and why or what equipment the Russians use to fight wars nowadays. And I mean, it's totally and utterly disgusting. The other reason, by the way, is that this dam breach, the Russians had warned about it a long time ago, saying, well, look, we're moving forward. We believe that the Ukrainians, I mean, this is months and months ago, will just breach this dam in order to stop our advance because it's on the front line, this river. So, it's pretty obvious who did it. Also, the other thing, which was an absolute red flag for me, is on the BBC the morning it was announced last Tuesday, they had a guy popped up on the TV I haven't seen for a long time called Andrei Perubi. Yatsenyuk, it was his name.
Oh, Yatsenyuk.
Yatsenyuk is one of the main coup plotters from 2014.
She was Victoria Nuland's man, wasn't she? She was Victoria Nuland's choice. Yeah. Yats is the
we
man.
We want Yats. Yats is our man, you know. So that's the guy that the Americans forced the Europeans to have as the prime minister after the coup. And he's totally under, I mean, CIA, basically. It was a CIA coup, State Department CIA coup, and he was one of their main coup plotters. So the idea that anyone would want to trust, I mean, BBC Verify should maybe check him out.
I want to take you back to something. I couldn't bring you back to it because you were in a good flow and I didn't want to stop you. But just to be fair to Darren Nesbitt and anybody working at the Light, they might have a different take on why you were excluded from moderating the Light paper. And they're not here to defend themselves, right? You said that you were unceremoniously booted off, but they're not here to say why that happened. Now, I love you. You know that. I think you're fantastic. I certainly wouldn't be booting you off my website, but they might have some other explanation as to why that did happen. I just want to point that out for
them. It was over Richard D. Hall. I mean, I was saying, look, we should not necessarily be promoting this guy who is causing, you know, it seemed to me anyway, causing immense cruelty to the families of the victims of Manchester Arena by peddling this idea that nobody died, that the people who supposedly died were just crisis actors. I think this is actually something you've got to have incredibly good hard evidence for that, absolutely 100% solid evidence, before you even go to the families and ask them and see if the people are alive and if they're still hiding somewhere.
I agree with you. You're a journalist, I'm a journalist, but maybe this guy Richard D. Hall was convinced that it was a crisis actor event, and maybe Darren Nesbitt and the Light paper people, if they were here, they would say, Tony, we provide on our forums an open a completely open source place where people can discuss anything. We don't want to be shutting down anything.
Well,
however, I would agree
because
with
they
you.
They weren't providing me with the space to say that, were they?
Right. Okay, but they might say
so
something.
It's not an open forum at all.
They might say, look, it's about something else entirely, but I hear you. And on that, I'm in complete agreement with
you. One other thing, let me just say about the Light, is they published an article in February, which I questioned. I said, well, it was a big article saying nuclear weapons don't exist, and the attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were actually faked, and that it wasn't nuclear weapons at all. And, you know, and I questioned that one too. I think they served a fantastic purpose during the pandemic. The Light were brilliant, but I just think they've lost their way now.
Yeah, others might say it's brilliant and it's doing a great job because it's going in the letterboxes of people that have never heard of Tony Gosling or Richie Allen.
It's become just like the mainstream press. So in other words, it's got some
Let's not have a debate about the content of The Light because I don't really see it very often. And I suppose the whole point really was the BBC going after it and going after others. It's going to be a sign of things to come. It's ultimately the... If there is such a thing as the independent media, it's the independent media it wants rid of. Tony Gosling is our guest. Not the BCFM politics show, Fridays at 5 o'clock, is unmissable. For more information on it, check out thisweek.org.uk. You are listening to my pal Tony Gosling. Tell us this tea. So the COVID inquiry today began to hear from Selina Hallett, isn't it, from the KCs, the King's Councils, public hearing, for the first time hearing witnesses. Look, it screams of whitewash to me. That's bloody obvious, isn't it? What do you think?
Well, absolutely right. I mean, you know, the way these... I think it was the brilliant documentary about the 7/7 London bombings entitled Ludicrous Diversions, which came out, I think it was actually less than 6 months after the London bombing attack, that they pointed out, there's a whole section in that documentary that pointed out the Inquiries Act after 2000. I think it was just not long after 9/11 they brought it in, which meant that the public inquiries were no longer controlled by the judiciary, that the ministers would appoint judges and also set the terms of reference of inquiries in future. It wasn't independent of government. So we've got a serious problem with all of our inquiries now, and we have had ever since then. Obviously, they did that in the run-up to the inquiry about 7/7. By the way, there was no public inquiry into 7/7. They just issued something called the narrative. So all these things are now government-controlled, which they shouldn't be. They should be controlled by the judiciary, by judges, independently. We saw the same with the VIP defile inquiry. In fact, the New Zealand lady, whose name slips my memory, who was appointed to lead that, actually left because she said, I can't have the Home Office appointing people to be all my senior counsel on this inquiry when actually the Home Office itself is implicated in paedophilia. So, you know, in many ways, actually, the Home Office has. I mean, we had Leon Britton, for example, Home Secretary, who was accused as part of the inquiry, so as a VIP paedophile. So this thing needs to certainly to look at the follow the money business. That is to say, the Tory party and people in the Tory party, like one of our neighbours in Stroud, someone who lives near us, managed to get a contract for PPE. Then he sold his house and bought a farm. These were all great little favours done. And he, by the way, was one in the Stroud Freemason, one of the masters of the top lodges in Stroud. And the Tory party did this with a lot of its friends. Enabled them to have contracts to produce all this stuff. So that's obviously one of the things that the inquiry should be looking into, but mainly things like the shifting of all these people from hospitals into care homes. And vice versa, the movement of people backwards and forwards from care home to hospital always should be accompanied by a COVID test. They should have been, you know, and there were COVID tests around quite near the beginning, not so many, but they should have been not moved unless they were tested negative for COVID. That's obvious.
But do you know what, Tony? Even if they were testing people, the tests themselves were proven to be completely unreliable because rather than amplify the cycles 20 times, they were amplifying them 40 times.
No, I agree. Yeah. But the tests were very... exaggerated. So if you had COVID, you'd definitely test positive. And so, you know, that would have been a reason not to move you. You know what I mean? So at least some sort of test to see if the person, or maybe even just testing their temperature, something like that. You know, and this was not done. And these are the basics of all of this. Also, the restrictions which were put on the press, they should be looking at that straight away. They should be looking at the WhatsApp messages of Matt Hancock quite definitely. But it's fascinating the way this has been used against Boris Johnson, who, you know, is a pro-Brexit prime minister who won a massive great majority, to actually force him out of the House of Commons. I think that's incredible, you know, that they've used this to actually kick out Boris, and now the Tory party don't stand a chance in next year's general election. We're almost certainly going to have David Lammy as our foreign secretary and Keir Starmer as our prime minister.
But isn't this
I don't think the Tory party really care.
But isn't this just manipulation by other people? I mean, we know that, you and I both know, we've known for many years, that it doesn't matter who the Prime Minister is. And what we're seeing at the moment is basically theatre to engage the masses in this drama, this never-ending drama, Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak, while, I agree with you, while they are preparing, by they we mean whoever's really controlling this shit show, they're prepared now to anoint Keir Starmer as the next Prime Minister, whereby the Green agenda will take off on steroids and everything else you said. So, you know, we can hardly feel sorry for Boris Johnson, right? He's a player. He knows the score. Right.
Well, I don't feel sorry for the guy, but I do recognise that he was a genuine Brexiteer. Maybe he wasn't to start with, but he became one, and he actually forced this through Parliament. And there was a massive, massive lobby on all sides of Parliament that was trying to stop the idea of Brexit actually being implemented. I mean, what this did is it showed us just what contempt these people have in Parliament for what the British people want. We don't want to be ruled by Brussels, which is this technocratic bureaucracy where you elect a load of MEPs that all they can do is just a talking shop. They can't make any laws. And it's far away. You know, they're controlling many of our laws and our policies. And if you want to cede your sovereignty to a technocratic elite, that's the way to do it. But Boris was saying, no, the people voted against that. What we're going to do is we're going to actually start running this country from Westminster again, which is a genuine parliament.
Nigel wants to
elect MPs.
Yeah.
They are the ones that actually make laws, you know, or they can do. So, no, I mean, he's there. There is a difference. There's a very big difference between Starmer and Sunak, that is the Goldman Sachs, City of London, if you want, international technocratic elite, deep state players, and the Mavericks like Johnson became, and you know, your people like Andrew Bridgen, all these people. I mean, I think Johnson would have been watching the way that Sunak has begun cancelling MPs like Bridgen and thinking, well, you know, I think we need to start a new party.
Yeah, but Johnson was in charge in March 2020 when the first lockdown was imposed on the country. You know, what if anything did Boris Johnson do?
Well,
in
wasn't he bamboozled into it? I mean, you know, but there is he represented a Brexit faction, a Brexiteer faction, which has been slowly squeezed out. I think maybe I mentioned this to you before, but there's this guy Karl von Habsburg, who during 2018, I think, or 2019, after the Brexit vote, was saying he's a, you know, aristocratic Hungarian, I think, or Austrian. He's saying this is hilarious. We're watching the Brits try to leave, and we know they can't leave because we've got too much power and too much control. It's like watching a reality TV show. And that article, I retweeted it the other day. I think, you know, these people have got such cheek and chutzpah. They really do believe, because they've got so much wealth, that they own Europe. They own the, you know, hundreds of millions of Europeans, and they can tell us exactly what to do. No, I think we need to have, you know, individual national sovereignty to fight back against that. And it's one of the big things that the Bilderbergers, which is, you know, I was over in Lisbon recently, you were chatting to me, hate the idea of people actually retaining their sovereignty. They're creating a United States of Europe, and nothing's going to stand in their way. And Boris was standing in their way. And that's why I think Sunak has made sure that he's out of Parliament now.
And this kind of, for me, this takes us back to a concerted effort on behalf of those who are really calling the shots to come after the independent media. So at the moment, we're seeing these articles popping up about, I mean, we saw these throughout 2020. You were given a dozen mentions or more in the national media. So was this particular programme, because we were interviewing people saying that lockdowns were unnecessary and that the vaccines might very well be, you know, dangerous and unproven and untried. So we're seeing this again. So how do you think this is going to play out then? Do you think that we will see, following the passing of the Online Safety Bill, will the independent media be regulated by Ofcom? Is that how it's going to work? Will Ofcom take?
I mean, we're already seeing it, aren't we? Yeah. I think we're already seeing it, Richie. People who are telling the truth and have got the references to back it up and the readership are being picked off one by one. So slowly, I mean, you know, simple things like me being removed by Patrick Hart, who's a mate of our marvellous Marvin the Mayor in Bristol, off of FM in Bristol. A couple of weeks ago, we saw Kit Clarenberg being arrested at Luton Airport on the way back, saying they believed he was a spy for Russia. You know, he's one of the best reporters at the Grey Zone UK, works very closely with Max Blumenthal, and is one of the most effective diggers into the case for Julian Assange, etc. So it's political policing, and I think that's partly why Mariana Spring and her lot have set up is to try and take down effective alternative media one by one. I think, you know, they're looking at whoever's getting the most hits, whoever's embarrassing them the most, and they're being lined up like at the fall of Rome. You know, one by one, their opposition are being assassinated, at least hopefully only character assassinated, and having their websites taken down and being arrested. But you know, the idea is to harry and harass anybody that's exposing this, you know, unbelievable lying system, which is trying to get Britain to start a third world war with Russia over what? A bunch of Nazis in Ukraine.
Tony, I'll let you get back to your tea. There's a breaking news story out of Ireland I need to cover. It's about an Irish entertainer called Christy Dignan. And it's obviously incredibly noisy there where you are anyway. So, listen, thanks for today.
There's a bit of banging going on in the background. One final thing I'd like to say,
quick though, as
Richie,
you can, go
is
ahead.
Just on the WikiSpooks site, there's a fantastic new section on Bilderberg. For anyone who's a follower of the this Nazi organisation set up to run the politics in the NATO countries after World War II, which is all about the people who've been died suspiciously at Bilderberg. Over 50 Bilderbergers have died suspiciously over the years, including a prime minister and one of the people on the steering committee who was saying the wrong thing about getting on with Russia. So quite clearly, the Bilderberg is part of NATO. It's a political wing of NATO, and it's making sure that they keep the Russians out of Europe, the Americans into Europe, and keep the Germans down, as was illustrated with the blowing up by the Bilderbergers from the 2022 meeting. People who were there were involved in it all, Seymour Hersh said, but keep the Germans down and, you know, just to separate them from Russia. Anyway, I'll let you get on with your show, Richie. Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for being on, Tony. The Friday, 5 o'clock Friday, not the BCFM Politics Show, live from Bristol, thisweek.org.uk. Check out bilderberg.org for all you need to know on the Bilderberg Group. Great to hear from you again, T. Thanks. Speak next time.
Cheers,
bye for now.
Thanks.
Tony Gosling, live on Tuesdays. I have to think about that. It is Tuesday, Dean Stagg. Yeah, I booked the time slot. We could only fit him in today because... other things happening later on in the programme. Let me just mention this. This will mean, I suppose, more, not exclusively, but it'll mean more to Irish listeners to the programme than maybe others in other parts of the world. Christy Dignam has passed away, the frontman or the former frontman of the rock band Aslan. He's been unwell for some time. He was 63. He died today. He entered palliative care, according to the national broadcaster RTE, in January, and he has been cared for at home by his family in recent months. If you love your music, you love Christy Dignam. He grew up in Finglas on the north side of Dublin, began playing music in the 1970s, formed Aslan, had a huge hit with a song called "This Is," their debut single. And they were signed immediately to EMI Records in the mid-1980s, right? There was huge interest in Ireland on the part of international record companies. So they recorded a debut album called Feel No Shame. It was critically acclaimed. It was fantastic. A brilliant singer, Christy Dignan. But he had his problems. He had his demons. Partly because he was sexually abused as a child. He was into drugs, and that ultimately led to the breakup of the band while the band was on the verge of international superstardom. Right? Heroin was his drug of choice. I think if you know anything about heroin or anybody who was ever addicted to heroin, you'll know how serious and how deadly that is. But he managed to get into recovery. He tried everything. He went to a Buddhist monastery in Thailand, would you believe, where he managed to clean up. But when he came out of that, he went back to drugs again. But he never gave up, and he went back in and out of treatment until eventually he was able to maintain sobriety. People will remember him playing with Conor Goff as part of the duo Dignam and Goff. Again, an act that I would have seen a dozen or more times when I was in my mid to late teens. Aslan got back together eventually. They had big hits with songs like Crazy World. They had an amazing, a kind of a seminal performance at Vicar Street in Dublin, which is recorded for a live album and live DVD, which was utterly amazing. Christy Dignam, huge part of my teenage years, an amazing singer, an amazing character. And anybody who ever met him along the road will tell you he was a gentleman. Always very forthcoming about his struggles with addiction, generous with his time, a ridiculous talent. I mean, ridiculous talent. I'm going to play this song for you, their first single, their first major hit. It's This Is for Christy Dignam, who passed away today, aged 63. And the world is not a better place for his departure, in my opinion. Aslan, This Is on the Richie Allen Show, remembering Christy Dignam, who passed away today, aged 63. And anybody who ever saw him perform live will never forget him. Thanks to Richard, Kelly, RIP Christy, Jonathan Stone, the same, RIP Christy Dignam. Jean Ann Crowley was in touch with me earlier on, just after the programme began. Jean Ann would be a friend of Bernie, who would have been Christy's sister, and she was looking after him in recent months. So, yeah, great Irishman. And that's all I can really say about that. I'm glad that I saw him and met him once or twice over the years. The time is coming up for 2 minutes past the hour. Lot of chat on Richard D. Hall. Look, remember one thing and one thing only. Programmes like this one, monologues, I don't bloody well know, video channels, they're about opinions and nothing more, nothing less. I don't believe that Tony Gosling knows Richard D. Hall personally. I never met Richard D. Hall, ever. I heard from him about 6 years ago. He reached out to ask me for a contact for David Icke. I reached out to ask David was it okay to pass on his details, and that is the only interaction I ever had with Richard D. Hall. He wasn't anybody who interested me really. You know, as a researcher, my take on what happened 5 years ago or 6 years ago in Manchester is simple. I lived literally, I hate that literally bullshit, I hate it. I lived across the street from a woman who worked at the Royal Infirmary. And she treated people who were brought into the infirmary that evening. Something happened at the arena on the 22nd of May, 2017. Something happened. And people were very badly injured. And some people were killed. Now you can discuss what happened and why later on. We know that the story around Salman Abedi, the man who they said did it, the man who they blamed for it. We know that story is very suspect, very dodgy. Why? Because David Shaler reached out to this programme not long after it and was able to reveal to me that during his days at MI5, he knew about a guy called Agent Tunworth, who turned out to be Ramadan Abedi, a man who was given money and materials in the 1980s to overthrow Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. What an amazing coincidence that a man who was working with MI6 to overthrow Gaddafi in the 80s and 90s, right? A guy called Ramadan Abedi. What an amazing coincidence that his son would be the man who packed a rucksack with bombs, or with a bomb, and then headed for the foyer of the arena. Of course it stinks to high heaven, but I can't speculate about it, about what did or didn't happen, because I don't know. All I could do at the time was put in the public arena the information given to me by David Shaler, which turned out to be accurate. Not long after David Shaler did the interview with me, The Guardian, would you believe it, mentioned the strange case of Ramadan Abedi and his son, the terrorist bomber. I don't buy the theory that the entire story of the arena bombing was fabricated and that there wasn't a bomb and that nobody was killed. I don't buy that. Tough shit, Paddy, if you don't like it. Now, I know you don't mind. I know you don't mind. You're here because you're open-minded. And I believe that people have the right People should have the right to speculate and to say, well, I don't think it happened. Fair enough. I'm not going to shut those people down, ever. But I think Richard D. Hall, you know, stalking people and hiding in their bushes and filming them to try and prove that they were lying about being injured, that's a bit shitty, really. Particularly when he discovered that, in fact, they were injured and that they couldn't go to work and that their scars were real and genuine. Did Richard D. Hall do the journalistic thing and then go on his channel and say, do you know what, I got that wrong, guys, because I followed some of these people and it turned out that they had life-changing injuries after all? No, Richard D. Hall didn't do that. Why did he not do that? I can't tell you that because I don't know him. I can only speculate. The speculation would be that he's a bit of a dipstick and a bit of a grifter, right? But I don't know that to be true either. But he did it. And he was caught out doing it, and there are consequences for doing that. Stalking people and harassing them. Something happened in the arena. I'm convinced of it. You ask me what? People died there. There was an explosion there. Who did it? I have no idea. Do I believe that Salman Abedi did it? Probably not, but I can't prove that. You know, I cannot prove it. I'm going to take another tune while I get Kate Shemarani on the line. It's Tuesday's Richie Allen Show, the 13th of June, 2023. We've got REM on the turntable.